Check out the Hog Talk Podcast, the newest addition to the Hit That Line Podcast Network. Find it on hitthatline.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at the game this year, but you could still be in on the action at betonline.ag. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. And there's always the online casino as well. It never closes. So head to betonline.ag today. Take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Again, that's betonline.ag. Sign up today. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Support for the Hog Talk Podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Get 20% off and free shipping using the code HAWG at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com using code HAWG.
You're listening to the Hog Talk Podcast, part of the Believe Podcast Network.
With us on the line is the voice of the Arkansas Razorback, Chuck Barrett.
A former guest of the show, Coach Mike Neighbors from the Arkansas women's basketball team.
We have from ESPN's Around the Horn, highly questionable. Also a two-time Dan Le Batard Show Suey winner and the former heptathlete at Cornell, Sarah Spain.
And we are happy to be joined by Martrell Spate.
Mr. Phil Elson, the voice of Razorback Baseball and the Ladybacks.
There we go. All right. 3, 2, 1. Yo, what's going on, Arkansas Razorback fans, SEC fans everywhere? Welcome to the one and only Hog Talk Podcast. I'm the Friday host, Ty Hudson. Alongside me, it's Kyle Sutherland, my man. How are you doing? It's been a little bit.
It has been a little bit. A little chilly down here. I know you guys are getting some wintery mix up in Fayetteville, up in the Fayetteville Springdale area. We're getting quite a bit of rain and just nasty cold weather, man. It's definitely that chilly kind of weather down here.
Yeah, my daughter asked me right before I went live tonight on the pig trail on YouTube. Excuse me, I'm drinking a beer. If you hear me belching in the background, I'm trying not to though. My daughter asked me, "You want some hot chocolate? It's hot chocolate weather, Dad." And I'm like, "Is it really that cold?" And I look out the window and it's just wet and nasty and crappy. And yeah, I think we're supposed to be a wintry mix. So yay, good times. I wish it was just snow. I mean, one good foot of snow a year. That's all I ask for. It shouldn't be that hard being up here in Northwest Arkansas. Shouldn't be that hard, but it is. Haven't had a good snow in a while. Do us a favor, guys. Give us some star power. Rate and review the podcast on Apple or wherever, however you listen to the podcast. We do appreciate you guys being a part of what we do. We will answer Discord questions later on in the show. Tonight, Kyle and I recording after an unfortunate loss on the road against a top 10 caliber, top 10 ranked Tennessee Volunteer team. What was your takeaway tonight, Kyle? Were you surprised, disappointed, maybe a little bit of both? What do you think?
I was surprised at first. Came out playing really, really well. You shot 57% in the first half, but you still had quite a bit of turnovers. Obviously during the entire game, 20 is just insanely too much. But despite having 10 turnovers, them having 10 points off of those said turnovers, I think they had just had one. And then you end up with the 20. That's a recipe for a loss. And yeah. I know that K.K. Robinson – didn't play a ton, but he went down, I believe, it was with a knee injury, so we'll see what happened with him. But still no Justin Smith. You're not exactly sure when. I know that we have a timetable, but you're not exactly sure when he will be back. But something that was just really big, though, is your two highest scorers, and Jalen Tate and Vance Jackson, Vance Jackson came out. Man, he just almost couldn't miss from that right side from three. He really stepped up tonight, even though he had 14 points, and so he was really big. I was going to say he had the most turnovers. It was actually Jalen Tate and was and Jalen Williams that had the most. So that would combine for 10 points or for 21 points right there, and you had 10 turnovers and then just 20 total. It was this time that the turnovers got you, and last game against Missouri, you just couldn't shoot. You didn't take up bad shots. You just couldn't hit them. That was the main problem. And so just a tough – but I'm not really panicking. I know that I had said that it's very likely that this team could possibly start off 0-3 when you start off at Auburn on the road, then you welcome in a tough Missouri team, and then you play who many believe is the best team in the SEC in Tennessee. And they played really well against Auburn, and then Justin Smith went down. That's obviously a big loss. And so I don't think it's time to panic at all. I don't think a lot of people are, but, you know, it's definitely some learning lessons.
Well, and, you know, you mentioned the Mizzou game. Again, you didn't have Smith for that. And you played arguably one of the worst games under Musselman since he's been the head coach. I think it was their worst. I know that game on the road last year, I think it was Tennessee, was not very good either. But that was sloppy, and they still were within arm's reach of that game for most of the game without Justin Smith, with how good Mizzou played on defense, with your ugly, terrible shot selection that Arkansas had, with, you know, not getting anything to go inside to get any, you know, no shots landing, you know, nothing going on there on the offensive end for the Hogs, and they still, for a good majority of that game, were within arm's length, were within arm's reach with that game. And I really thought they could beat Mizzou, if I'm being honest. I thought they were good enough, but I think we're learning a little bit more about this team these last three games, including the Auburn win. They fight till the very end. Something familiar to Arkansas fans, because the football team, I mean, they did that for the most part. Outside of Bama and Florida, you really competed with everybody. You know, you kept things somewhat close. And you're seeing the same thing. I mean, these guys fight, and I love seeing that. Obviously, you'd like to walk out of here with a win, but unfortunately, you're going to lose back-to-back games. Something similar tonight. I mean, they didn't give up. They it looked like Tennessee the last 3 or 4 minutes were going to try and stretch out that lead, get it up to 8, 9, then possibly double digits, and Arkansas found a way to get back into it, you know, and I can't remember who was. I think it was Tate who hit that last second or in the final minutes hit that three and knocked it down. I will say this, and I said on the live show, I can't believe how bad Arkansas is. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. They're terrible around the rim. They're awful. This is probably some of the worst inside basketball I've seen played by Arkansas in a while, and I can't figure out why that is. You're longer. You've got more depth. You've got guys that are athletic enough that should be able to drive the lane and make something happen. They can't finish at the rim. You almost feel like every time they try to drive the lane or get something to work inside, or even if it's a simple putback. We saw Connor Vanover. He made one putback, I think, tonight, but then he missed a crucial one in the final minutes of this game. I just can't figure out why they're so bad around the rim. You know, it's not necessarily just in the paint, but it's just finishing around the rim. And you got to get that fixed. But like you said, the 20 turnovers, oh my gosh. I mean, you can't do that and expect to win, especially on the road against a top 10 Tennessee team who only turned the ball over 5 times. You know, no one really got in foul trouble. They had two of their starting five had 3 fouls. And to think of it, you know, Arkansas in the final minutes, of course, you had some fouls to give, and of course, you know, you had to foul to try and keep this game close in the final minutes. But for the most part, you stayed out of foul trouble. What's crazy about this too is you shot 52% from the floor. We'll just go ahead and dive into the stats. 52% from the floor, almost 53, 29 of 55. You shot 40% at 3-point range, 8 of 20, and you were 80%, even though you only took 10 shots at the stripe, which is, I'm not going to go into officiating in this game. It wasn't the worst I've seen, but I do think there were some missed calls. But again, not saying that's why you lost. We kind of covered that already with the turnovers. But, you know, you shot 80% there. You had production from your bench. Jackson logged 33 minutes and shot 50% from the floor, 3 of 6. 3 of 6 from 3-point range, 14 points. He was your second leading scorer off the bench behind JD Notte. The guy was not exactly clutch, but he filled in for Justin Smith. You had a lot of positives tonight. And it just goes to show you what happens when you can't hang on to the ball and when you turn it over that much. And again, that's what Tennessee does. They're one of the best forced turnover teams in the country. I liked, you know, the rebounding game. Look, they out-rebounded Tennessee 37-28. I think in the first half it was like a 2-1 margin. It was pretty crazy. But yeah, they would end up shooting 45% from the floor, which is great. They were 28% at 3-point range. They shot on 26 attempts at the free throw line. They shot 77%, 20 of 26 there, with some pretty good production off their bench. But disappointing loss. But you're happy with it, right? I mean, if you could be, not that anyone's happy with a loss, but you're gonna be okay with this one. You're gonna turn around. You got a tough game coming up, but yeah, I'm really hoping Arkansas could find a way to pull this one out, and they just couldn't. They didn't have it. What do you think?
What I was gonna say. I got tongue tied just a second ago. I meant to say your two leading scorers in Jalen Tate and J.D. Notte, you know, they combined for over 30 points, but yeah, they also had half your turnovers. That's what I was getting at before. Jalen Williams also, and I'll tell you, I thought that was great. Jalen Williams got the start. He's you know, had some freshman mistakes. He's had two pretty solid games against even Missouri. I would say that he was one of the bright spots. He had 8 points. I know there wasn't really any, but and he's now three out of these four freshmen now have at least one start. So they're really starting to get it together. I know Moses Moody had a really tough night, only 6 points, 1 for 8 from the field.
Yeah.
And his last points were 3:28 left in the first half with three free throws that he shot. And so he did have a tough going. And this was a game that, Ty, you really kind of felt like maybe. I didn't necessarily think that it was going to happen, but because just the way the flow of the game was going. But this could have been one of those ones where he really took over and showed that, okay, look, I am that legit. I think he is a one-and-done player, but this could have been his defining game, number 9 Tennessee on the road, and he could have shown it early in the season. But that's just what this is. It's early in the season, and like I said, after I had mentioned so many times that this team could start off 0-3, I still – now believe it's only January as we're recording, January 6th. We got tons of basketball left to be played. I 100% think that so long as they stay healthy, once you get Justin Smith back, I think that they can win some games even without him. But once you get him back and down the stretch as we get closer to the end of the season, once you head to late February, early March, this will be a top four team in the SEC.
Well, and you know, you mentioned Moody, Desi Seals, back to back.
Yeah. Probably the worst two back-to-back games he's played as a Razorback.
18 minutes. In SEC play, that's his fewest minutes contributed, I believe. No points. Turned the ball over 3 times. 2 rebounds. Of course, they were 2 offensive rebounds. You love seeing those second-chance shots. You ended up with 6 all night. But, yeah, this was his worst. Well, it just was not a good game for him. I mean, I don't know how you log that much time on the floor, almost 20 minutes. And again, like I said, I think that's his fewest minutes in SEC play. I think it's his fewest minutes all year, or maybe one of. And tearing the ball over 3 times with no points. He's really, I don't know if it's a confidence thing. I don't know what's going on. Or if it's just the matchup. You know, you've played back-to-back really, really good teams who've taken him out of the game. And maybe that's the same thing with Moody. I don't know. He got 37 minutes. 37 minutes, he had 6 points. You know, he had a couple of rebounds and an assist, but that was really it, you know. He didn't turn the ball over, and something else too. We're not seeing them get as many blocks as I would like to see. I think they had, I had it pulled up here. I think they had 2 all night, and maybe again that's just the way Tennessee played them. They did a really good job shooting over the top of Connor Vanover inside. I don't like that Connor Vanover can get bullied so easily. He does force you, and I have to remind my YouTube chat this. Like he does. He forces you to alter your shot. That's why you like him out there on the, you know, playing the 5 on defense. And that's why you like him logging 25, 27 minutes, you know, because he can be an issue to deal with. And yeah, it helps. He has, you know, he can get you 8-9 rebounds a night. You know, you're not going to overlook that. And he stretches the floor on the offensive end. He can drain threes. He was 1 of 3 tonight. So there's, like you said, you're doing this without Justin Smith. You've got room to grow. I'm going to stand by the fact I just don't like the way this team can't finish at the rim. But these are things they can get that adjusted. I think they can work on that and improve. Maybe not overnight, but it was a little bit better. You know, what they did at Mizzou, I don't remember the numbers, but it was something terrible at the rim, you know, with their layups. It was really bad. And they got a little bit better tonight. So maybe it's baby steps. I don't know. But they've got some room to work with there, and I think they'll improve as the year goes on. And I'm with you, too. I think they can win. I think they can still win without Justin Smith. They haven't quite shown it yet with these last two games, but they did beat Auburn, and they've been competitive. Nobody's blown them out yet. Like the man Kyle said, we've got a lot of basketball left. There's a lot of season left. So, okay. Start the music. Discord questions. I did not proofread these, so I don't know. Earmuffs, kiddos.
I think they're pretty clean. I was scanning them
okay.
a second ago. I think they're pretty clean.
Did Hawes leave us a question? He did.
Yeah, Hawes actually kept it. You know, he asked his two or three like he always does, which is totally fine. But yeah, looks like we got plenty of PG right here.
All right. Well, let's start off with Gavin Pratt. Gavin wants to know, and I'll let you take this one, Kyle. What do you think is holding the basketball team? Well, I've got the answer, but I'm going to let you. I want to hear what you think. What do you think is holding the basketball team back the most?
Well, during the 8-0 run, we said it was youth, that there was any negatives that you had to say before digging really deep into it, but I think we've already touched on it. And against Missouri, it was just you couldn't hit a shot. And against Tennessee, you turned the ball over too much. And so I think that so far that's what we've seen, is that we just have too many unforced turnovers, especially against Tennessee. You just had too many unforced turnovers, just kind of being lazy with it or not paying attention, whatever it was. I saw that a lot, especially with JD Notte. I mean, he had a great game. But, man, just I don't know. He's been great off the bench this year, really contributing with points. But that's really just what it boils down to. You can't make senseless turnovers. And also the one that we've all been talking about, just cannot finish at the rim. That's really the main things right now that is holding this team back.
That was going to be my not being able to finish at the rim. It is just so bad. But the youth is that's on
defense and offense. Like, you know what happened? Connor should have put that ball in there at the end. That just should have happened. I know that he gets a lot of grief. He's 7'3", so he should walk on water. That's pretty much what some of the media, the national media, makes it believe. But I'm not saying that, but I will say that he should have had that one.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. That was should have been a really easy put back for him. W. Watkins, 1-2-3, wants to know, after the first three SEC games, do you both expect us to win 10-plus league games? I'm going to say yes. Yeah, I do.
Yeah. I think at least 10. I think my initial, I never put it out in the public. It was just talking with you guys. I think I said that they would win maybe 10 or 11, around that range. So, yeah, I'm still there, even missing Justin Smith for a few more games.
And that's the stuff that's unseen. You know, I mean, injuries do account for something. I mean, they just do. They account for something. Without someone like Justin Smith out on the floor, that matters. And that's going to – the way he stepped up this year, I mean, holy cow, you know, especially in non-conference. You know, I mean, he just was such a big part of all the good you were doing on both ends of the floor. So, all right, Jay Hawes Jr. 17. I always have to brace myself for these, but you say it's clean, so let's do this. How do we correct the turnovers? That's a good question. Will the Hogs go after another transfer quarterback? How important is keeping our staff intact for another 2 years? Why haven't you followed me back, Ty? Saw some offers going out. Any idea who we should watch for the next class? Good grief. He just can't give me like one question. It's got to be like 4, 5, 6 questions here. Thanks for making it easy for us. I'm kidding. He knows we love him. I don't know how you work on turnovers. I'm not a – I don't know what you do.
Well, like I said, a lot of them are unforced. And so you just – like I saw one where JD was – looked like he was trying to drive the paint, and he put the ball to his side and just got ripped.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. You got to take care of the ball better. You just got to be more disciplined.
Do the Hogs go after a transfer quarterback? I don't think they do, and I don't think they should. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. How important is keeping our staff intact for another 2 years? Boy, that's going to be tough. That's tough anywhere. I don't care if you're Alabama or – you know, Louisiana Tech. I mean, that's just, it's huge to keep your staff intact. you still wonder if you get into spring camp without losing Kendall. I mean, Kendall Briles, he's going to be a name. He's going to be a name every weekend. You're going to have to. You're probably going to hear someone or someone's going to share a message board post somewhere that Kendall Briles is on the short list. You know, we're not out of the woods yet. Although I feel pretty confident that everyone other than Step obviously comes back. Why haven't I followed you back? I don't know. I mean, earn my follow, Jay Hawes. Earn it. You know?
I don't think he's very active on, you know, he's very active on Facebook sharing memes. I don't think he's that active on Twitter.
I don't think he is. I don't think he is. I don't know. Show up to more of my live streams on YouTube, Hawes. I don't know. I kind of take mental notes of these things. I know who you guys are in my chat. I'm kidding. I'll follow you back. I promise. I don't know about any offers going out and any idea who we should watch for in the next for the next class. I think he's talking about the 2022 class.
Yeah, I mean, 2022, man, all you got to do is just go to 247 or Rivals or ESPN and just look at the in-state class, and you'll get a lot of answers right there. Of course, they've put out a lot of offers in Georgia and Texas, stuff like that. I really haven't kept up with it a whole lot. I've really mainly paid attention to the 21 class, which, you know, we're pretty much almost filled out. But, man, you really don't have to look a whole lot. I'm not saying that they're only going to recruit Arkansas, obviously, but – really, you don't have to look too far outside the state. Oklahoma, Texas, you know, and then I guess the furthest would be where we have the most would probably be maybe Florida or Georgia. I know there's multiple offers in both of those states, but man, I'm telling you, I am excited to cover this 22 class, Ty. We're going to have some studs in the natural state next year.
I've been asked about Isaiah Santagna down at Fayetteville. Part of this, he's a part of this 2022 class. I know he's fast. I don't know much more about him than that. I just haven't really talked with a whole lot of people. I haven't had eyeballs on him. I've seen some of his video. He's definitely fast. You'd like him. I mean, I'm this way with anybody. As long as you got a good catch radius, I don't care if you're 5'9" or 6'3". But it'd be nice if he's a little bit taller. I think Santagna's like 5'10". I think.
Maybe. Yeah, he's about 5'10", 5'11". I saw him play in week two this year against at North Little Rock, and he had a good game. He had actually a really good game. He had seven catches for like 130, 145 yards. And so he's very, very fast. He's got some route running stuff to work on, in my opinion. There is, you know, just like a lot of players that mm-hmm. are in high school coming, regardless if they're a high caliber recruit or not, you got plenty to work on. And I think that's the case with him. But yeah, he is definitely a burner. But I think personally, the best player, the Razorback coaching staff apparently does not believe so right now, but I think Joe Hyman from Pulaski Academy is without question the best all-purpose player.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, running, but I'm not just saying that because he had 3,000 total yards throughout this season. I mean, the guy is just he can do so many things. He's a receiver. He can line up in the slot. He can do. I mean, I saw him play three times, and I would say he was probably the most impressive player, at least on offense, that I saw all year.
I don't know. I haven't seen his offer list.
His biggest one, I don't think he has any SECs. He's got a couple of P5s. He's got Louisville and I think one or two others, but those are the biggest, like ACC and maybe a Big Ten in there. I want to say maybe Michigan State. I know Michigan State's offered a couple of our guys, but that's what he's gotten so far. But, yeah, I mean, he's not the biggest. I mean, he's about 5'10", but, man, I'm telling you, we've had some – shorter running backs that have done some really, really good things for us.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, we just talked about Treylon. Treylon's not exactly a hoss. So, yeah, in that class, and you talk about it, people forget, man, you got two four-star tackles in this class.
Yeah.
Out of the state.
Nico Davile, who's just a freakishly athletic defensive lineman. Yeah, you're talking about Andrew Chambly from Maumelle, and then you've got Amarion Harris, who is the son of a former Razorback, Elliot Harris, and he's, I believe, the only kid that's got an offer from Alabama, and they offered him as a sophomore. So, and then from 2023, you've got a kid named Will Moss, a big-time offensive line. He's already like 6'4", well over 300, and moves really well. So, yeah, I know Coach Pittman's going to be really excited with the offensive line crop that we've got.
Would have been nice if these guys were a year older. It'd be great to. Although, so really quick before we answer the last Discord question, most of you know, but so Odom's going to stick around. That's old news now by the time you hear this. And Tykese Crawford talking about these four-star tackles. That was such a big get for the Hogs. Grades are not an issue as far as I know. 3.0 GPA, something like that. So this isn't a great issue. I don't know why. We still don't know why he pushed his date back 24 hours, but he did. But he's a Hog. Big time get. Former this beer's trying to come back up. Former four-star commit to the Hogs. He was committed to Chad Morris, and then we backed off of his recruitment because of grades. And I guess he did pretty well where he was at, and he was at Charlotte, right? Charlotte?
Yes.
Yeah.
UNC Charlotte. Yeah, and per Otis Kirk, that's where I had gotten that from when I mentioned that to you guys the other day, is he had a 3.0 at Charlotte. It's great. You know, got his business taken care of, and that, you know, obviously that's the most important part of this, because not only, you know, to get that degree, but to play sports. That's the reason why he's there, and he's got a very, very high ceiling. I remember once I heard that he was really favoring us under Chad's staff, that I was really excited to get him. It was great to have him on board. And then he decommitted after the Kentucky game, but 6'5", 340 pound, around the 340 pound mark. Just a great player overall. And I think that, like I told you guys this morning, I really could see him being one of those guys that we talk about for a long time when he's gone. And I could see him having a long NFL career.
Yeah. So it was a good one. That's a good, pretty good, not a bad Tuesday, considering you lost Step, and seemed like most Razorback fans were ready to jump off a ledge. And then you fast forward to Tuesday, much better news. You replaced Step, and Crawford committed to the Hog. He's going to be a Hog. Should have a full 4 years to play, because this year obviously didn't count for anybody. So he's going to be good for 4 years, like Kyle said. Last question on Discord, Trip. Long time no see, friend.
Trip's back. It's been a while.
It has been a minute. Do you guys think the Hogs can pick up the pieces and win these competitive games? Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, they can do it. They're like we said, everything, I think all their issues right now, they're manageable. They're fixable. It's nothing. It's not like last year where you're worried about depth and size. You got those things. You've got legitimate, I think you've got an NBA talent on the floor. I mean, you're good enough. It's there. Couple losses, and they came to ranked teams, really good teams, both of which are tournament caliber teams at the moment. Both of which are tournament caliber teams. Yeah, everything that we've seen so far is completely fixable. So, all right, thank you guys so much for your Discord questions. And I think for this segment, I don't know if there's anything else left to talk about. Is there anything you wanted to add? Did I miss anything? I feel like I did. I feel like I missed something.
I think we got a really good segment next with gymnastics coach Jordan Weaver. You know, we had her on about a year ago, actually right around the time that I joined up with you guys. We had her on, and so get to talk about. I know Porter's got some questions about, you know, what she's learned from COVID, from last year, and how she's used that this year for her coaching tactics and everything, and going into a new season. So, man, you know, we've got her. She's building a really good program there. She's a young coach, like in her mid 20s, and already done a great job.
Yeah, they're drawing crowds too. I mean, until COVID.
I don't know how much that's going to happen this year? Yeah. But yeah, they are definitely doing that.
It's pretty awesome. There's multiple things to do in Fayetteville, and their majority, it's either Dixon Street or whatever the Razorbacks are doing, and that's a good sign, man. When everybody on campus is just killing it. Men's sports, women's sports, they're just absolutely killing it. When you can fill the stadium. But even when they're not, they're still competitive. They're winning ball games. Lady backs are still doing really well. And let's hope the men's team can get it put together and play out the rest of these home games competitively. Try not to lose too many more. And I still think this basketball team, I still think the men's team is a tournament team. I have not jumped off board. I'm not off the ship yet, but like I said, they've got to get that fixed at the rim. Finish at the rim, for the love of God. You should be so much better there, and they're not. Get it fixed. I think it is fixable, and I think they will get it fixed. So, all right. Thank you guys so much. Remember to rate and review the podcast. I am Ty Hudson. He is Kyle the Man Sutherland. I don't know. I got to come up with a nickname for everybody. I can't believe we haven't done that. We don't all have nicknames. Okay. You guys, be sure, stick around. Up next is Porter Hayes here on the Hog Talk Podcast. Woo pig zooey.
With American National, you get a dedicated agent who will help you make well-informed decisions about protecting your lifestyle. Call us today for a free review of your commercial, home, and auto policies, or to learn more about our customizable farm and ranch insurance. Let the Atkins Agency be your agency of choice. You can visit us on the web at theatkinsagency.com. Call us at 501-428-0877 or connect with us through Facebook. Go Hogs!
Located in Fayetteville, Wrapology is your top spot for banners, signs, and wraps. From commercial fleet wraps, color changes, vinyl decals, and much more, they take care of you in a timely and professional manner. Call Wrapology today at 479-368-6490. Again, that's 479-368-6490.
The Hog Talk Podcast is brought to you by Heinemann Services. Heinemann Services is a family-owned and operated business whose work ethic and customer service will restore your confidence in handymen. They offer interior and exterior projects for your home or business, including repairs, installations, small remodels, landscaping, decks, fencing, and much more. Call Corey and his crew today at 479-347-9336. That's 479-347-9336.
Welcome back to the episode 154 of the Hog Talk Podcast, and we're going to go to the Workman's Travel Center hotline where we bring in the head coach of the Arkansas gymnastics team and recent 2020 class Hall of Fame in the Michigan sports. Jordan Weaver, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yes, well, it's been a while since we talked, and a lot has happened since the last time we talked. I think y'all were in the middle of the season, and then a few short weeks later, it seemed like everything just shut down. So kind of talk about, you know, the ending of last season and how everything kind of just unfolded and everything getting canceled and what you've done to prepare for this season.
Yeah, so it was March, and we were kind of getting ready for our last home meet in Barnhill Arena. We were supposed to honor our three seniors who are graduating. And then the week after that was the SEC championship. And that whole week, you know, we weren't really sure what was going to happen. And it was about the day before, and I'm getting calls from the opposing team and from the SEC, and just things are getting canceled left and right. And it just all happened really fast. And, you know, it was really hard on our team. You know, I think everybody during this pandemic is experiencing a lot of different types of loss on so many different levels. And, you know, for our team, especially our seniors, that it felt like loss. And I think they were just about to begin peaking in their season. So it was tough, but we very quickly, we let our team kind of feel the emotions of all of that. And then, you know, throughout the summer, we were obviously only meeting on Zoom and having a lot of conversations about, okay, yes, this sucks, but where do we go from here? How do we use this as a springboard, and how do we use this as an opportunity to be resilient and to get through it and to grow as people along the way? And that's kind of the challenge of every human being right now through this pandemic, is just how are you going to be resilient? How are you going to keep putting one foot in front of the other and persevere? So, and then we got back together as a team in the fall, and everything looks a little bit different. And so we're adjusting. We are figuring out how to be really flexible. That's, I think, the best life lesson for our team right now, is figuring out how to do things differently and less comfortably, but to still make it work. And I think that's a lesson they're going to take in their lives, and we're making it happen. And we're just excited to have whatever type of season that we do have this year. We're really grateful for it.
So how are you approaching this season, knowing what you know about the pandemic and being able to see how other coaches have handled, especially like you look at the women's basketball team and what Coach Neighbors does with his team? It doesn't go into halftime. You know, he really tries to do the best he can to limit those exposures. So what have you learned from other coaches coming into this season?
We watched the fall sports really closely to see what kind of protocols they do, especially when they travel. I think that's the trickiest part. But you know, for me, my number one focus is making sure that I'm protecting our team the best that I can, and making sure we have every single protocol we can possibly think of in place to make sure that their health and well-being is taken care of. And that's at the forefront of my focus. I feel like that's my duty. And that's always been a really solid part of my foundation as a head coach. And, you know, with my own experience in gymnastics, that's been a goal of mine, is, you know, through everything, you know, with all of the desire to win, and you know, winning is fun, but my first and foremost priority is making sure that my athletes are taken care of, and that we're protecting their health and well-being. So we've thought of every protocol we can possibly think of. We're trying to do it as safely as we possibly can. The great thing about gymnastics is that, you know, we're actually competing or practicing, we can be very socially distant. In our practice facility, they're required to be 6 feet apart at all times. And when they're actually doing gymnastics on the equipment, everybody has to be 12 feet apart. So we're really trying to keep everybody distant. When they're not doing gymnastics, they're wearing their masks 100% of the time. So those are kind of like the day-to-day things that we do, you know, in addition to all the hand sanitizer and cleaning of the equipment and all these extra things we're doing to try to limit any spread of this virus within our team. But, you know, we're about to go on a road meet this weekend, and we're really trying to think of every possible caution we can take to make sure our team is safe and healthy.
And having a team, you know, you don't have the roster size of like a football team or the baseball team. You know, how has that kind of really affected like the team chemistry? And, you know, because last year, you know, getting the season cut short, it was your team really seemed like a tight knit, best friend type team. So how has that been affected? Because when I had Coach Hale on, he was talking about the teams just, they had their practices, they were distanced, and then they went on their own separate ways and were kind of, if they didn't have a roommate, they were just kind of by themselves. So are you facing the same, you know, similar situations?
We are. It's tough because last year we, you know, every year we really put so much focus and intention towards getting our team connected and bonded because at the end of the day, I feel like that's the extra little secret sauce that great teams have, is that they are connected and they have each other's backs. And I think that involves a lot of trust building, especially outside of the gym. And our athletes are used to hanging out with each other in large groups, and they just can't do that this year. And that's the reality. So, you know, with every adjustment we've had to make and every obstacle, you know, this one being, you know, you can't hang out with each other in large groups outside of the gym, we've tried to flip that and figure out which piece of that we're really grateful for. And okay, no, we can't hang out with each other outside the gym in large groups, but yes, we get an opportunity to come and be with each other in the gym. And yes, we're distant, but we get that time together. And so we've really tried to flip that perspective and be grateful for what we do have. And it's also posed a really interesting challenge of how do we get the team connected when we can't even have team meetings where they can sit within 6 feet of each other. And so we've gotten really creative, especially with team activities and those normal like team building type things that we do. You know, when it was still warm outside, we did a lot of it outside. You know, obviously with masks on and everything, we've had to get creative. It's tough. And then, you know, more of the gymnastics piece of that, we've really stressed everybody needs to be ready to compete at all times. In the case that we do have somebody test positive and they're out for 1 to 3 weeks, we got to have people that can step in and have their back and take their spot in the lineup. So, that's something we stress every year, but even more this year, because there's more things that are out of our control in terms of this virus. So this year has posed a lot of different challenges, but we're trying to take on every single one the best that we can. And I think at the end of the day, this is such a great learning year for our team, and they're going to grow as people. I'm just really excited and grateful for that.
Yeah. I'm talking about last year, you know, you know, if people not familiar with the gymnastics, they just look at a record, but you know, you went 2-7, but I'm looking at your record, your schedule this year, and you start off with number 3 LSU back-to-back meets. Then you got Georgia. So it's almost like, if you want to put it in football terms, you're playing the SEC West as your schedule, and everybody's ranked in the top 10. So, you know, You're trying to prep for a regular season along with everything, and then you're going against some of the top teams in the nation. But you're returning 2 All-Americans in Kennedy Hambrick and Sophia Carter. So what is that experience going to help with coming into this season?
Yeah, we've got, you know, some seasoned upperclassmen in Kennedy and Sophia and Sarah Schaefer, who you know, they are looking the best they've ever looked. So I'm really excited about having them as sort of these key players for our team. And you know, you talk about our schedule, this year, the major difference, and we compete against every SEC team every year anyways. That's our reality every year, which I actually love. I think it only challenges our team and makes us better to compete against the hardest teams. And the interesting thing about gymnastics is, you know, everybody's used to focusing on the win. And even, you know, as a head coach and in my coaching staff and even our team, we all like winning. And that's just, you know, who we are as people. But at the end of the day for gymnastics, you know, we don't really focus on our opponent at all. We're not playing defense. We're not trying to figure out, you know, their style or anything like that. We solely focus on our own team. And it doesn't matter what arena we're in, where we're going, if it's home, if it's away, our job is to walk in and on any piece of equipment with any color in the audience, we do our job. And so the way our postseason is set up and how we qualify, it's based on our team scores. So whether we win or lose, if we're constantly getting better as a team and we're improving our team scores, that's our sweet spot right there. That's what gets us where we need to be as a team. And then, you know, as the year goes on, if it turns into some one meets, that's great too. But our record actually is irrelevant when it comes to the postseason. It's more about how we're scoring as a team. And then we take our two best home scores, our two best away scores, and combine it. And that's how we qualify to postseason.
And I know you said you don't really look at a team win as a whole. You know, you're wanting your team to get better and better. But how big was it as a program to get those back-to-back SEC wins over ranked opponents last year?
Yeah, that was fun. It was great. And again, we didn't go in with the intention of, okay, guys, we have to win this meet. It's okay, if we do what we know we can do as a team, we will win. And so that was really exciting, especially at home with Georgia here. Georgia's historically a really a great program. They've won national championships. So that was a really good confidence booster, I think, for our team. I think that's when I look at wins, that's kind of how I view it, is it's almost like a little confidence booster for our team, even though sometimes it's not the most relevant piece of information through the season. And then going on an away meet and getting a win right after it at Missouri, that was great. And you know, one of our team's goals is to beat even more SEC teams this year. But they know that the way to get there is to not focus on what team that is, what that other team's doing. It's to focus on what we're doing and what we can do to be better.
Yeah, and it's funny. I was just thinking as we were talking, you know, your motto for the team was rise, and it just clicked to me. What a year to really have that as your motto and be your slogan is that rise in a year that we're facing, and talking about rising up and really exceeding expectations with COVID and, you know, battling in the SEC. So it really is really fitting for 2021.
Yeah, absolutely. And in another word that has kind of come up, and it's weird how it's all worked out, but you know, the very first team meeting we had our team identify what their values were. And so they came up with six values as a team, you know, things like hard work, accountability, communication, trust, you know, kind of those really foundational things. And when you took the first letter of all those values, it spelled uncharted. And like, it just kind of clicked with me. And I think it was one of our seniors actually, you know, spelled it all out and said, it spells uncharted. And, you know, think about this year, we are on completely uncharted territory with the way this pandemic has affected our season and what we normally do. There is no normal anymore. So that this theme of uncharted, it yes, it is their values. It's also, you know, a symbol of this year is different and we're on uncharted territory, but at the same time, our team wants to get to uncharted territory in terms of their performance. They are still striving to be better despite all of the obstacles and challenges, and they want to keep rising above where they were the year before and building on what they know they can do. So I love that. I think it's cool how it all worked out and kind of weaves through their values, their goals, and this type of year that we're experiencing.
So along with your returning All-Americans, I noticed you only got two seniors, a grad transfer on your team. So talk about some other players, or I should say players, other teammates that we should be looking forward to seeing and who you really want to stand out for this upcoming season.
Well, obviously our seniors, Sarah Schaefer and Sophia Carter, like I said, they have never looked better. And I think that's really rare when it comes to gymnasts. usually they don't get better with age, but they are. And that says a lot about the type of athlete that they are, especially Sarah. She's having a great year, and I'm excited to see what she accomplishes. And then our grad transfer, Maggie O'Hara, came from Michigan and was really looking to not only start grad school, but finish out her competitive career. So you'll want to watch her on bars and beam for us. She's a gorgeous, gorgeous bar swinger, beautiful lines, and she should score really well. And then besides our seniors, Bailey Lovett was kind of a breakout star for us last year on three events, bars, beam, and floor. She is on that same trajectory this year and is kind of bound and determined to elevate her scores from where she was last year. So she's in that, like, I got to get half tenth better on everything mindset right now, which is really cool. And then obviously Kennedy Hambrick, she's going to compete all around for us again. She's another one that has really matured, and she has figured out a better way to train this year that has made her body feel a little bit healthier and will, I think, in turn affect her performance positively. So I'm excited about Kennedy. And we also have another transfer, Abby Johnston, who will compete, probably two events for us, and just excited about the way the team is coming together, and they're all stepping up and just ready to compete when they're needed.
So you're going to be playing this year in Barnhill. Was there any talks of possibly trying to figure out a way to get into Bud Walton because of the restrictions, everything?
Mm-hmm. There was, and as you can imagine, there's a lot of different elements that kind of go into a decision like that. It's definitely on our radar. It's on the athletic department's radar, and it's a goal of ours. If it's not this year, then we're definitely looking at next year, because I feel like last year we made great strides with filling up Barnhill Arena, and I think even this year with our social distancing protocols and with how many seats we're going to have available, I think we're still going to, quote unquote, sell out Barnhill with what we're allowed to have in there. So I'm really excited about that. Hopefully next year we can get everybody, equally as excited about gymnastics and start, piling into Bud Walton. That would be fantastic. I think that would be a huge milestone for us and for our team, and just exciting. So it's definitely on the radar. If not this year, then hopefully next year.
Yeah, because I've noticed, watching the Olympics and watching college meets, if more than any sport, I think that feeds off of fan interacting, it's gymnastics, because it's almost like a performance and you feed off of that crowd. So how many people will be allowed in Barnhill, and, how is that? How do you think that will affect, the teammates preparing to play against or in front of a lesser crowd?
Yeah. Right now we're looking at probably around 1,200 people, and we've got a lot of season ticket holders who have both renewed, and we have new season ticket holders. So between all of those people, we're going to hopefully get a few students in there, and we're going to sell some single meet tickets as well. But I fully expect we're going to max out that number every time. But, I think, although it's not as many people as last year, I feel like if that's what we need to do to stay safe and do gymnastics meets in the most responsible way, then we're going to be okay with that. And we're also going to be on ESPN quite a few meets, so that will help. Those that can't be in Barnhill can watch it on TV, and I'm really happy about that. In terms of our team, you're right, they do feed off of the crowd's energy, and my message to anybody who is in the crowd is, although we will be a smaller crowd, we need to be just as mighty. And I think that's going to take a lot of effort from those that are watching to stand up and cheer loud. And that's kind of how our crowd normally is. They love to be interactive and engage. So hopefully we can recreate that. If it's less people, hopefully we can, those less people can be even more mighty. And that's my goal for our crowds, no matter what size they are. Hopefully we can create that same energy and that same feeling and environment in Barnhill that we're used to having.
Yeah, and I don't think that'll be a problem. I think, with your success and really the momentum that's picked up through the gymnastics team, I don't think you'll have a problem with, selling out. But Coach, kind of talk about, you just recently got inducted into the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame along with, Chauncey Billups, Megatron, and Shane Battier. So kind of what does that mean to you personally that you got recognized by your home state?
Oh, it means so much to me. It was a huge surprise, honestly, when I got the call. But I just feel extremely honored. I felt very, very supported by the entire state of Michigan as I was, growing up in gymnastics and training for the Olympics. Everyone in that whole state, especially my hometown, just really supported me. And I feel very honored to be a part of that induction class, especially with some of those superstars that I get to stand next to. And it's really an honor.
Well, Coach, it's been a pleasure as always. Thank you so much for taking time, especially with the busy week getting ready. So tell our fans how we can watch, if we can watch the meet, what time, and of course, yep, your Twitter following. That way we can share anything we can to get them connected with the program.
Yep. Well, we'll be at LSU competing on Friday evening, and it's going to be on ESPN or SEC Network ESPN. And I think it's 8:30 Eastern time, so 7:30 Central time. So hopefully everybody can get a chance to watch that. We're excited to go down to Baton Rouge and hopefully travel very safely. But we're excited to get out there and get started again.
Well, Coach, I thank you again for your time, and I'm going to look forward to trying to get up and catch a meet this year and really – looking forward to seeing the success of your team this year.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, that will do it for episode 135 of the Hog Talk Podcast. For myself, Porter Hayes, and our special guest, Jordan Weaver, that will do it. And go Hogs.
Thanks, Jordan.